Part 2 Chapter 1
"What is it? What is the matter with you?" said Ordinov, waking up completely, still pressing her in his strong, warm embrace. "What is the matter with you, Katerina? What is it, my love?"
She sobbed softly, with downcast eyes, hiding her flushed face on his breast. For a long while she could not speak, and kept trembling as though in terror.
"I don't know. I don't know," she said at last, in a hardly audible voice, gasping for breath and scarcely able to articulate. "I don't know how I came here."
She clasped him even more tightly, with even more intensity, and in a violent, irrepressible rush of feeling, kissed his shoulder, his hands, his chest. At last, as though in despair, she hid her face in her hands, fell on her knees, and buried her head in his knees. When Ordinov, in inexpressible anguish, lifted her up impatiently and made her sit down beside him, her whole face glowed with a full flush of shame. Her weeping eyes sought forgiveness, and the smile that, in spite of herself, played on her lip could scarcely subdue the violence of her new feeling. Now she seemed again frightened. Mistrustfully, she pushed away his hand, and, with drooping head, answered his hurried questions in a fearful whisper.
"Perhaps you have had a terrible dream," said Ordinov. "Perhaps you have seen some vision, yes? Perhaps he has frightened you. He is delirious and unconscious. Perhaps he has said something that was not for you to hear. Did you hear something? Yes?"
"No, I have not been asleep," answered Katerina, stifling her emotion with an effort. "Sleep did not come to me. He has been silent all the while, and only once he called me. I went up, called his name, spoke to him. I was frightened. He did not wake and did not hear me. He is terribly sick. The Lord succor him. Then misery came upon my heart, bitter misery. I prayed and prayed, and then this came upon me."
"Hush, Katerina, hush, my life, hush. You were frightened yesterday."
"No, I was not frightened yesterday."
"Has it ever been like this with you at other times?"
"Yes."
And again she trembled all over and huddled up to him like a child.
"You see," she said, repressing her sobs, "it was not for nothing that I have come to you. It was not for nothing that I could not bear to stay alone," she repeated, gratefully pressing his hands.
"Enough. Enough shedding tears over other people's sorrows. Save them for a dark day when you are lonely and cast down and there is no one with you. Listen, have you ever had a love?"
"No, I never knew a love before you."
"Before me? You call me your love?"
She suddenly looked at him as though surprised, would have said something, but then was silent and looked down. By degrees, her whole face suddenly flushed again a glowing crimson. Her eyes shone more brightly through the forgotten tears still warm on her eyelashes, and it could be seen that some question was hovering on her lips. With bashful shyness, she looked at him once or twice, and then looked down again.
"No, it is not for me to be your first love," she said.
"No,
no," she said, shaking her head thoughtfully, while the smile stole gently again over her face.
"No," she said at last, laughing. "It's not for me, my own, to be your love."
At that point, she glanced at him, but there was suddenly such sadness reflected in her face, such hopeless sorrow suddenly overshadowed all her features, such despair all at once surged up from within, from her heart, that Ordinov was overwhelmed by an unaccountable, painful feeling of compassion for her mysterious grief, and looked at her with indescribable distress.
"Listen to what I say to you,"
she said in a voice that wrung his heart, pressing his hands in hers, struggling to stifle her sobs.
"Heed me well. Listen, my joy. You calm your heart, and do not love me as you love me now. It will be the better for you. Your heart will be lighter and gladder, and you will guard yourself from a fell foe, and will win a sister fond. I will come and see you as you please, fondle you, and take no shame upon myself for making friends with you. I was with you for 2 days when you lay in that cruel sickness. Get to know your sister. It is not for nothing that we have sworn to be brother and sister. It is not for nothing that I prayed and wept the Holy Mother for you. You won't get another sister. You may go all round the world. You may get to know the whole earth and not find another love like mine. If it is love your heart wants, I will love you warmly. I will always love you as I do now, and I will love you because your soul is pure and clean and can be seen through. Because when first I glanced at you, at once I knew you were the guest of my house, the longed-for guest, and it was not for nothing that you wanted to come to us. I love you because when you look at me, your eyes are full of love and speak for your heart, and when they say anything, at once I know of all that is within you and long to give my life for your love, my freedom. Because it is sweet to be even a slave to the man whose heart I have found. But my life is not mine, but another's, and my freedom is bound. Take me for a sister, and be a brother to me, and take me to your heart when misery, when cruel weakness falls upon me. Only do so, that I have no shame to come to you and sit through the long night with you as now. Do you hear me? Is your heart open to me? Do you understand what I have been saying to you?
She tried to say something more, glanced at him, laid her hand on his shoulder, and at last sank helpless on his bosom. Her voice died away in convulsive, passionate sobbing. Her bosom heaved, and her face flushed like an evening sunset.
My life, whispered Ordynov.
Everything was dark before his eyes, and he could hardly breathe.
My joy, he said,
not knowing what he was saying, not understanding himself, trembling lest a breath should break the spell, should destroy everything that was happening, which he took rather for a vision than reality, so misty was everything around him.
I don't know. I don't understand you. I don't remember what you have just said to me. My mind is darkened. My heart aches, my queen.
At this point, his voice broke with emotion. She clung more tightly, more warmly, more fervently to him. He got up, no longer able to restrain himself. Shattered, exhausted by ecstasy, he fell on his knees. Convulsive sobs broke agonizingly from his breast at last, and the voice that came straight from his heart quivered like a harp string from the fullness of unfathomable ecstasy and bliss.
Who are you? Who are you, my own? Where do you come from, my darling?
He said, trying to stifle his sobs.
From what heaven did you fly into my sphere? It's like a dream about me. I cannot believe in you. Don't check me. Let me speak. Let me tell you all. All. I have long wanted to speak. Who are you? Who are you, my joy? How did you find my heart? Tell me. Have you long been my sister? Tell me everything about yourself. Where you have been till now. Tell me what the place was called where you lived. What did you love there at first? What rejoiced you? What grieved you? Was the air warm? Was the sky clear? Who were dear to you? Who loved you before me? To whom did your soul yearn first? Had you a mother? Did she pet you as a child? Or did you look round upon life as solitary as I did? Tell me, were you always like this? What were your dreams? What were your visions of the future? What was fulfilled and what was unfulfilled with you? Tell me everything. For whom did your maiden heart yearn first, and for what did you give it? Tell me, what must I give you for it? What must I give you for yourself? Tell me, my darling, my light, my sister. Tell me, how am I to win your heart? Then his voice broke again, and he bowed his head. But when he raised his eyes, dumb horror froze his heart, and the hair stood up on his head. Katerina was sitting pale as a sheet. She was looking with a fixed stare into the air. Her lips were blue as a corpse's, and her eyes were dimmed by a mute, agonizing woe. She stood up slowly, took two steps forward, and, with a piercing wail, flung herself down before the icon. Jerky, incoherent words broke from her throat. She lost consciousness. Shaken with horror, Ordynov lifted her up and carried her to his bed. He stood over her, frantic. A minute later, she opened her eyes, sat up in the bed, looked about her, and seized his hand. She drew him towards her, tried to whisper something with her lips that were still pale, but her voice would not obey her. At last, she burst into a flood of tears. The hot drops scalded Ordynov's chilly hand.
"It's hard for me. It's hard for me now. My last hour is at hand," she said at last, in desperate anguish.
She tried to say something else, but her faltering tongue could not utter a word. She looked in despair at Ordynov, who did not understand her. He bent closer to her and listened. At last he heard her whisper distinctly,
"I am corrupted. They have corrupted me. They have ruined me."
Ordynov lifted his head and looked at her in wild amazement. Some hideous thought flashed across his mind. Katerina saw the convulsive workings of his face.
"Yes, corrupted," she went on. "A wicked man corrupted me. It is he who has ruined me. I have sold my soul to him." "Why? Why did you speak of my mother? Why did you want to torture me? God, God be your judge!"
A minute later, she was softly weeping. Ordynov's heart was beating and aching in mortal anguish.
"He says," she whispered in a restrained, mysterious voice, "that when he dies, he will come and fetch my sinful soul. I am his. I have sold my soul to him. He tortures me. He reads to me in his books. Here, look at his book. Here is his book. He says I have committed the unpardonable sin. Look, look!"
And she showed him a book. Ordynov did not notice where it had come from. He took it mechanically. It was all in manuscript, like the old heretical books which he had happened to see before, but now he was incapable of looking or concentrating his attention on anything else. The book fell out of his hands. He softly embraced Katerina, trying to bring her to reason.
"Hush, hush," he said. "They have frightened you. I am with you. Rest with me, my own, my love, my light." "You know nothing, nothing," she said, warmly pressing his hand. "I am always like this. I am always afraid. I've tortured you enough, enough." "I go to him then," she began a minute later, taking a breath. "Sometimes he simply comforts me with his words.
Sometimes he takes his book, the biggest, and reads it over me. He always reads such grim, threatening things. I don't know what, and don't understand every word, but fear comes upon me, and when I listen to his voice, it is as though it were not he speaking, but someone else, someone evil, someone you could not soften anyhow, could not entreat, and one's heart grows so heavy and burns, heavier than when this misery comes upon me. "Don't go to him." "Why do you go to him?" said Ardinoff, hardly conscious of his own words. "Why have I come to you? If you ask, I don't know either. But he keeps saying to me, 'Pray, pray.' Sometimes I get up in the dark night, and for a long time, for hours together, I pray. Sometimes sleep overtakes me, but fear always wakes me, and then I always fancy that a storm is gathering round me, that harm is coming to me, that evil things will tear me to pieces and torment me, that my prayers will not reach the saints, and that they will not save me from cruel grief. My soul is being torn. My whole body seems breaking to pieces through crying. Then I begin praying again, and pray until the Holy Mother looks down on me from the icon more lovingly. Then I get up and go away to sleep, utterly shattered. Sometimes I wake up on the floor, on my knees before the icon. Then sometimes he wakes, calls me, begins to soothe me, caress me, comfort me. And then I feel better. And if any trouble comes, I am not afraid with him. He is powerful. His word is mighty." "But what trouble? What sort of trouble have you?" And Ardinoff wrung his hands in despair. Katerina turned fearfully pale. She looked at him like one condemned to death without hope of pardon. "Me? I am under a curse. I am a murderess. My mother cursed me. I was the ruin of my own mother." Ardinoff embraced her without a word. She nestled tremulously to him. He felt a convulsive shiver pass all over, and it seemed as though her soul were parting from her body. "I hid her in the damp earth," she said, overwhelmed by the horror of her recollections and lost in visions of her irrevocable past. "I have long wanted to tell it. He always forbade me with supplications, upbraidings, and angry words, and at times he himself will arouse all my anguish as though he were my enemy and adversary. At night, even as now, it all comes into my mind. Listen, listen. It was long ago, very long ago. I don't remember when, but it is all before me as though it had been yesterday, like a dream of yesterday, devouring my heart all night. Misery makes the time twice as long. Sit here beside me. I will tell you all my sorrow. May I be struck down, accursed as I am, by a mother's curse. I am putting my life into your hands." Ardinoff tried to stop her, but she folded her hands, beseeching his love to attend. And then, with even greater agitation, began to speak. Her story was incoherent. The turmoil of her spirit could be felt in her words, but Ardinoff understood it all, because her life had become his life, her grief his grief, and because her foe stood visible before him, taking shape and growing up before him with every word she uttered, and, as it were, with inexhaustible strength, crushing his heart and cursing him malignantly. His blood was in a turmoil. It flooded his heart and obscured his reason.
the wicked old man of his dream, Ordynov believed this, was living before him.
"Well, it was a night like this," Katerina began, "only stormier, and the wind in our forest howled as I had never heard it before. It was in that night that my ruin began. An oak was broken before our window, and an old grey-headed beggar came to our door and said that he remembered that oak as a little child, and that it was the same then as when the wind blew it down. That night, as I remember now, my father's barge was wrecked on the river by a storm, and though he was afflicted with illness, he drove to the place as soon as the fishermen ran to us at the factory. Mother and I were sitting alone. I was asleep. She was sad about something and weeping bitterly, and I knew what about. She had just been ill. She was still pale and kept telling me to get ready her shroud. Suddenly, at midnight, we heard a knock at the gate. I jumped up. The blood rushed to my heart. Mother cried out. I did not look at her. I was afraid. I took a lantern and went myself to open the gate. It was he. I felt frightened, because I was always frightened when he came, and it was so with me from childhood, ever since I remembered anything. At that time he had not white hair. His beard was as black as pitch, his eyes burnt like coals. Until that time, he had never once looked at me kindly. He asked me, 'Is your mother at home?' Shutting the little gate, I answered that father was not at home. He said, 'I know,' and suddenly looked at me in such a way. It was the first time he had looked at me like that. I went on, but he still stood. 'Why don't you come in?' 'I'm thinking.' By then we were going up to the room. 'Why did you say that father was not at home when I asked you whether mother was at home?' I said nothing. Mother was terror-stricken. She rushed to him. He scarcely glanced at her. I saw it all. He was all wet and shivering. The storm had driven him 15 miles, but whence he came and where he lived, neither mother nor I ever knew. We had not seen him for 9 weeks. He threw down his cap, pulled off his gloves, did not pray to the icon nor bow to his hostess. He sat down by the fire." Katerina passed her hand over her face, as though something were weighing upon her and oppressing her. But a minute later, she raised her head and began again. "He began talking in Tatar to mother. Mother knew it. I don't understand a word. Other times when he came, they sent me away. But this time mother dared not say a word to her own child. The unclean spirit gained possession of my soul, and I looked at my mother, exalting myself in my heart. I saw they were looking at me. They were talking about me. She began crying. I saw him clutch at his knife, and more than once of late I had seen him clutch at the knife when he was talking with mother. I jumped up and caught at his belt, tried to tear the evil knife away from him. He clenched his teeth, cried out, and tried to beat me back. He struck me in the breast, but did not shake me off. I thought I should die on the spot. There was a mist before my eyes. I fell on the floor, but did not cry out. Though I could hardly see, I saw him. He took off his belt, tucked up his sleeve, with the hand with which he had struck me, took out the knife, and gave it to me. 'Here, cut it away. Amuse yourself over it, even as I insulted you, while I, proud girl, will bow down to the earth to you for it.' I laid aside the knife. The blood began to stifle me. I did not look at him. I remember I laughed without opening my lips and looked threateningly straight into Mother's mournful eyes, and the shameless laugh never left my lips, while Mother sat pale, death-like.
With strained attention, Ardinov listened to her incoherent story. By degrees, her agitation subsided after the first outburst. Her words grew calmer. The poor creature was completely carried away by her memories, and her misery was spread over their limitless expanse.
He took his cap without bowing. I took the lantern again to see him out instead of Mother, who, though she was ill, would have followed him. He reached the gates. I opened the little gate to him, drove away the dogs in silence. I see him take off his cap and bow to me. I see him feel in his bosom, take out a red Morocco box, open the catch. I look in. Big pearls. An offering to me. "I have a beauty," says he, "in the town. I got it to offer to her, but I did not take it to her. Take it, fair maiden. Cherish your beauty. Take them, though you crush them under your foot." I took them, but I did not want to stamp on them. I did not want to do them too much honour. But I took them like a viper, not saying a word. I came in and set them on the table before Mother. It was for that I took them. Mother was silent for a minute, all white as a handkerchief. She speaks to me as though she fears me. "What is this, Katya?" And I answer, "The merchant brought them for you, my own. I know nothing." I see the tears stream from her eyes. I see her gasp for breath. "Not for me, Katya. Not for me, wicked daughter. Not for me." I remember she said it so bitterly. So bitterly. As though she were weeping out her whole soul. I raised my eyes. I wanted to throw myself at her feet. But suddenly the evil one prompted me. "Well, if not to you, most likely to Father. I will give them to him when he comes back. I will say the merchants have been. They have forgotten their wares." Then how she wept, my own. "I will tell him myself what merchants have been, and for what wares they came. I will tell them whose daughter you are, you bastard child. You are not my daughter now, you serpent's fry. You are my accursed child." I say nothing. Tears do not come to me. I went up to my room, and all night I listened to the storm, while I fitted my thoughts to its raging. Meanwhile, 5 days passed by. Towards evening, after 5 days, Father came in, surly and menacing, and he had been stricken by illness on the way. I saw his arm was bound up. I guessed that his enemy had waylaid him upon the road. His enemy had worn him out and brought sickness upon him. I knew, too, who was his enemy. I knew it all. He did not say a word to Mother. He did not ask about me. He called together all the workmen, made them leave the factory and guard the house from the evil eye. I felt in my heart in that hour that all was not well with the house. We waited. The night came, another stormy, snowy one, and dread came over my soul. I opened the window. My face was hot. My eyes were weeping. My restless heart was burning. I was on fire. I longed to be away from that room, far away to the land of light, where the thunder and lightning are born. My maiden heart was beating and beating. Suddenly, in the dead of night, I was dozing, or a mist had fallen over my soul. and confounded it all of a sudden. I hear a knock at the window.
Open!
I look. There was a man at the window. He had climbed up by a rope. I knew at once who the visitor was. I opened the window and let him into my lonely room. It was he. Without taking off his hat, he sat down on the bench. He panted and drew his breath as though he had been pursued. I stood in the corner and knew myself that I turned white all over.
Is your father at home?
He is.
And your mother?
Mother is at home too.
Be silent now. Do you hear?
I hear.
What?
A whistle under the window.
Well, fair maid, do you want to cut your foe's head off? Call your father, take my life. I am at your maiden mercy. Here is the cord. Tie it if your heart bids you. Avenge yourself for the insult. I am silent. Well, speak, my joy.
What do you want?
I want my enemy to be gone, to take leave for good and all of the old love, and to lay my heart at the feet of a new one, a fair maid like you.
I laughed, and I don't know how his evil words went to my heart.
Let me, fair maid, walk downstairs, test my courage, pay homage to my hosts.
I trembled all over. My teeth knocked together, but my heart was like a red-hot iron. I went. I opened the door to him. I let him into the house. Only on the threshold, with an effort, I brought out, "Here, take your pearls and never give me a gift again." And I threw the box after him.
Here Katerina stopped to take a breath. At one moment she was pale and trembling like a leaf. At the next, the blood rushed to her head, and now, when she stopped, her cheeks glowed with fire. Her eyes flashed through her tears, and her bosom heaved with her laboured, uneven breathing. But suddenly she turned pale again, and her voice sank with a mournful and tremulous quiver.
Then I was left alone, and the storm seemed to wrap me about. All at once I hear a shout. I hear workmen run across the yard to the factory. I hear them say, "The factory is on fire." I kept in hiding. All ran out of the house. I was left with Mother. I knew that she was parting from life, that she had been lying for the last 3 days on her deathbed. I knew it. A cursed daughter. All at once, a cry under my room, a faint cry, like a child when it is frightened in its sleep. And then all was silent. I blew out the candle. I was as chill as ice. I hid my face in my hands. I was afraid to look. Suddenly I hear a shout close by. I hear the men running from the factory. I hung out of the window. I see them bearing my dead father. I hear them saying among themselves, "He stumbled. He fell down the stairs into a red-hot cauldron, so the devil must have pushed him down." I fell upon my bed. I waited, all numb with terror, and I do not know for whom or what I waited, only I was overwhelmed with woe in that hour. I don't remember how long I waited. I remember that suddenly everything began rocking. My head grew heavy. My eyes were smarting with smoke, and I was glad that my end was near. Suddenly, I felt someone lift me by the shoulders. I looked as best I could. He was singed all over, and his kaftan, hot to the touch, was smoking.
"I've come for you, fair maid. Lead me away from trouble as before you led me into trouble. I have lost my soul for your sake. No prayers of mine can undo this accursed night.
Maybe we will pray together. He laughed, the wicked man. Show me, said he, how to get out without passing people. I took his hand and led him after me. We went through the corridor. The keys were with me. I opened the door to the storeroom and pointed to the window. The window looked into the garden. He seized me with his powerful arms, embraced me, and leapt with me out of the window. We ran together, hand in hand. We ran together for a long time. We looked. We were in a thick, dark forest. He began listening. There's a chase after us, Katya. There's a chase after us, fair maid. But it is not for us in this hour to lay down our lives. Kiss me, fair maid, for love and everlasting happiness. Why are your hands covered with blood? My hands covered with blood, my own. I stabbed your dogs. They barked too loud at a late guest. Come along. We ran on again. We saw in the path my father's horse. He had broken his bridle and run out of the stable, so he did not want to be burnt. Get on it, Katya, with me. God has sent us help. I was silent. Won't you? I am not a heathen, not an unclean pagan. Here I will cross myself if you like. And here he made the sign of the cross. I got on the horse, huddled up to him, and forgot everything on his bosom, as though a dream had come over me. And when I woke, I saw that we were standing by a broad, broad river. He got off the horse, lifted me down, and went off to the reeds where his boat was hidden. We were getting in. Well, farewell, good horse. Go to a new master. The old masters all forsake you. I ran to father's horse and embraced him warmly at parting. Then we got in. He took the oars, and in an instant we lost sight of the shore. And when we could not see the shore, I saw him lay down the oars and look about him, all over the water. Hail, he said, stormy river mother, who giveth drink to God's people and food to me. Say, hast thou guarded my goods? Are my wares safe while I have been away? I sat mute. I cast down my eyes to my bosom. My face burned with shame as with a flame. And he, thou art welcome to take all, stormy and insatiable river. Only let me keep my vow and cherish my priceless pearl. Drop but one word, fair maid. Send a ray of sunshine into the storm. Scatter the dark night with light. He laughed as he spoke. His heart was burning for me, but I could not bear his jeers for shame. I longed to say a word, but was afraid and sat dumb. Well then, be it so, he answered to my timid thought. He spoke as though in sorrow, as though grief had come upon him too. So one can take nothing by force. God be with you, you proud one, my dove, my fair maid. It seems strong is your hatred for me, or I do not find favour in your clear eyes. I listened, and was seized by spite and love. I steeled my heart. I said, pleasing or not pleasing, you came to me. It is not for me to know that, but for another senseless, shameless girl who shamed her maiden room in the dark night, who sold her soul for mortal sin and could not school her frantic heart, and for my sorrowing tears to know it, and for him who, like a thief, brags of another's woe and jeers at a maiden's heart. I said it, and I could bear no more. I wept. He said nothing, looked at me so that I trembled like a leaf. Listen to me, he said, "fair maid," and his eyes burned strangely.
"It is not a vain word, I say. I make you a solemn vow. As much happiness as you give me, so much will I be a gentleman. And if ever you do not love me, do not speak, do not drop a word, do not trouble, but stir only your sable eyebrow, turn your black eye, stir only your little finger, and I will give you back your love with golden freedom. Only, my proud, haughty beauty, then there will be an end to my life, too." And then all my flesh laughed at his words.
At this point, Katerina's story was interrupted by deep emotion. She took breath, smiled at her new fancy, and would have gone on, but suddenly her sparkling eyes met Ordynov's feverish gaze fixed on her. She started, would have said something, but the blood flooded her face. She hid her face in her hands and fell upon the pillow as though in a swoon. Ordynov was quivering all over, an agonizing feeling. An unbearable, unaccountable agitation ran like poison through all his veins and grew with every word of Katerina's story. A hopeless yearning, a greedy and unendurable passion took possession of his imagination and troubled his feelings, but at the same time his heart was more and more oppressed by bitter, infinite sadness. At moments, he longed to shriek to Katerina to be silent, longed to fling himself at her feet and beseech her by his tears to give him back his former agonies of love, his former pure, unquestioning yearning. And he regretted the tears that had long dried on his cheeks. There was an ache in his heart, which was painfully oppressed by fever and could not give his tortured soul the relief of tears. He did not understand what Katerina was telling him, and his love was frightened of the feeling that excited the poor woman. He cursed his passion at that moment. It smothered him. It exhausted him, and he felt as though molten lead were running in his veins instead of blood.
"Ah, that is not my grief," said Katerina, suddenly raising her head. "What I have told you just now is not my sorrow," she went on in a voice that rang like copper from a sudden new feeling, while her heart was rent with secret unshed tears. "That is not my grief. That is not my anguish, not my woe. What? What do I care for my mother? Though I shall never have another mother in this world, what do I care that she cursed me in her last terrible hour? What do I care for my old golden life, for my warm room, for my maiden freedom? What do I care that I have sold myself to the evil one and abandoned my soul to the destroyer, that for the sake of happiness I have committed the unpardonable sin? Ah, that is not my grief, though in that great is my ruin. But what is bitter to me and rends my heart is that I am his shameless slave, that my shame and disgrace are dear to me, shameless as I am. But it is dear to my greedy heart to remember my sorrow as though it were joy and happiness that is my grief, that there is no strength in it, and no anger for my wrongs." The poor creature gasped for breath, and a convulsive, hysterical sob cut short her words. Her hot, laboured breath burned her lips, her bosom heaved and sank, and her eyes flashed with incomprehensible indignation. But her face was radiant with such fascination at that moment. Every line, every muscle quivered with such a passionate flood of feeling, such insufferable, incredible beauty, that Ordynov's black thoughts died away at once, and the pure sadness in his soul was silenced, and his heart burned to be pressed to her heart, and to be lost with it in frenzied emotion. to throb in harmony with the same storm, the same rush of infinite passion, and even to swoon with it. Katerina met Ordynov's troubled eyes and smiled so that his heart burned with redoubled fire. He scarcely knew what he was doing.
"Spare me. Have pity on me," he whispered, controlling his trembling voice.
Bending down to her, leaning with his hand on her shoulder and looking close in her eyes, so close that their breathing was mingled in one.
"You are killing me. I do not know your sorrow, and my soul is troubled. What is it to me what your heart is weeping over? Tell me what you want. I will do it. Come with me. Let me go. Do not kill me. Do not murder me."
Katerina looked at him immovably. The tears dried on her burning cheek. She wanted to interrupt him, to take his hand, tried to say something, but could not find the words. A strange smile came upon her lips, as though laughter were breaking through that smile.
"I have not told you all, then," she said at last, in a broken voice. "Only, will you hear me? Will you hear me, hot heart? Listen to your sister. You have learned little of her bitter grief. I would have told you how I lived a year with him, but I will not. A year passed. He went away with his comrades down the river, and I was left with one he called his mother to wait for him in the harbour. I waited for him 1 month, two, and I met a young merchant, and I glanced at him and thought of my golden years gone by. 'Sister, darling,' said he, when he had spoken two words to me, 'I am Alyosha, your destined betrothed. The old folks betrothed us as children. You have forgotten me. Think, I am from your parts.' And what do they say of me in your parts? 'Folks gossip says that you behaved dishonorably, forgot your maiden modesty, made friends with a brigand, a murderer,' Alyosha said, laughing. 'And what did you say of me?' 'I meant to say many things when I came here.' And his heart was troubled. 'I meant to say many things, but now that I have seen you, my heart is dead within me. You have slain me,' he said. 'Buy my soul too. Take it, though you mock at my heart and my love, fair maiden. I am an orphan now. My own master and my soul is my own, not another's. I have not sold it to anyone, like somebody who has blotted out her memory. It's not enough to buy the heart. I give it for nothing, and it is clear it is a good bargain.' I laughed, and more than once, more than twice, he talked to me. A whole month he lived on the place, gave up his merchandise, forsook his people, and was all alone. I was sorry for his lonely tears, so I said to him one morning, 'Wait for me, Alyosha, lower down the harbour as night comes on. I will go with you to your home. I am weary of my life, forlorn.' So night came on. I tied up a bundle, and my soul ached and worked within me. Behold, my master walks in without a word or warning. 'Good day. Let us go. There will be a storm on the river, and the time will not wait.' I followed him. We came to the river, and it was far to reach his mates. We look, a boat, and one we knew rowing in it, as though waiting for someone. 'Good day, Alyosha. God be your help. Why, are you belated at the harbour? Are you in haste to meet your vessels? Row me, good man, with the mistress to our mates, to our place. I have let my boat go, and I don't know how to swim.' "Get in," said Alyosha, and my whole soul swooned when I heard his voice. "Get in with the mistress, too. The wind is for all, and in my bower here there will be room for you, too." We got in. It was a dark night. The stars were in hiding. The wind howled. The waves rose high, and we rowed out a mile from shore. All three were silent.
"It's a storm," said my master, "and it is a storm that bodes no good. I have never seen such a storm on the river in my life as is raging now. It is too much for our boat. It will not bear three."
"No, it will not," answered Alyosha. "And one of us, it seems, turns out to be one too many," he says, and his voice quivers like a harp string.
"Well, Alyosha, I knew you as a little child. Your father was my mate. We ate at each other's boards. Tell me, Alyosha, can you reach the shore without the boat, or will you perish for nothing? Will you lose your life?"
"I cannot reach it, and you too, good man, if it is your luck to have a drink of water. Will you reach the shore or not?"
"I cannot reach it. It is the end for my soul. I cannot hold out against the stormy river. Listen, Katerina, my precious pearl. I remember such a night, but the waves were not tossing. The stars were shining, and the moon was bright. I simply want to ask you, have you forgotten?"
"I remember," said I.
"Well, since you have not forgotten it, well, you have not forgotten the compact when a bold man told a fair maiden to take back her freedom from one unloved, eh?"
"No, I have not forgotten that either," I said, more dead than alive.
"Ah, you have not forgotten. Well, now we are in a hard case in the boat. Has not his hour come for one of us? Tell me, my own, tell me, my dove. Coo to us like a dove your tender word."
"I did not say my word then," whispered Katerina, turning pale.
"Katerina!"
A hoarse, hollow voice resounded above them. Ordynov started. In the doorway stood Murin. He was barely covered with a fur rug, pale as death, and he was gazing at them with almost senseless eyes. Katerina turned paler and paler, and she, too, gazed fixedly at him as though spellbound.
"Come to me, Katerina,"
whispered the sick man, in a voice hardly audible, and went out of the room. Katerina still gazed fixedly into the air, as though the old man had still been standing before her. But suddenly the blood rushed glowing into her pale cheek, and she slowly got up from the bed. Ordynov remembered their first meeting.
"Till tomorrow, then, my tears," she said, laughing strangely. "Till tomorrow. Remember at what point I stopped. Choose between the two. Which is dear or not dear to you, fair maid? Will you remember? Will you wait for one night?" she repeated, laying her hand on his shoulder and looking at him tenderly.
"Katerina, do not go. Do not go to your ruin. He is mad," whispered Ordynov, trembling for her.
"Katerina!"
he heard through the partition.
"What? Will he murder me?"
"No fear,"
Katerina answered, laughing. "Good night to you, my precious heart, my warm dove, my brother," she said, tenderly pressing his head to her bosom, while tears bedewed her face. "Those are my last tears. Sleep away your sorrow, my darling. Wake tomorrow to joy." And she kissed him passionately.
"Katerina, Katerina,"
whispered Ordynov, falling on his knees before her and trying to stop her.
Katerina!"
She turned round, nodded to him, smiling, and went out of the room. Ordinov heard her go in to Murin. He held his breath, listening, but heard not a sound more. The old man was silent, or perhaps unconscious again. He would have gone into her there, but his legs staggered under him. He sank, exhausted, on the bed.